Once you see somebody else in the room like you, no matter what type of abuse you've gone through, it makes you feel like it's going to be okay. Somebody else gets it.
Hi, and welcome to Lead Well. Today, I have another wonderful guest, Stephen Elliott Borodkin. Hi, Steve.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Steve, you are an author. You're the author of a book, Street Level. It's a memoir of survival that is both stark and deeply human. And to me, this book is, I haven't read a lot of books, to be honest, over the last few years, because I'm usually listening to my books. But yours really, I couldn't stop reading because it was, I must admit, also so unexpected, really surprising at places. And on the other hand, so emotional, but without being too emotional. So I really loved it.
Thank you.
But this is not the only thing about you, because I know you're also a poet and you also are a musician. And I see the guitar
Yes.
behind you. So you're playing in a
Yeah, one of
band.
them. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Wow. And you are a dog lover. So you live with a
I
dog.
am. I
And
am.
you're also working for Wild Animal Rescue.
That's correct. Yeah, we do. We rescue animals. We get calls. We go out and we bring them back to the hospital, or I answer the phones there.
Wow, that's
Yeah, it's
wonderful.
that's a beautiful thing.
That's great. And I think I can say that I've been following you on Facebook because you are the partner of one of my former colleagues, Deb Boulanger. And
Yes.
that's how I came to not know you, but to follow you.
Yeah, things are meant to be. People make those connections. Deb is just a wonderful person, a huge part of my heart, and all this comes from that. The freedom to do what you want to express yourself comes from having a good partner. Really,
Yeah.
for me, anyway.
Wow. Because when I look into your book, there was a lot of trauma. And I think trauma is a really big topic these days. And a lot of
Yeah.
people talk about PTSD and how they now suffer from trauma. And the experiences that you had to go through are pretty traumatic, but you have such a kind soul and loving personality that shows through. And when reading your book, I really was asking myself, how come this person can still be so kind after all these experiences?
It's an interesting question. I had a lot of help acknowledging my heart as a child, different mentors. You don't realize who they are or what they're telling you until you get older and you grasp how deep it was that they said the most important part about any type of survival is keeping in mind who you are as a child going through that type of trauma, especially from someone like a parent, could pull you into a place that you never feel you can come out of. Having somebody in your life who's also a part of your family, who shows you the beauty in life, was a large yin and yang to me. And it came to the point where I could not have one without the other. And the pain that I went through was only negated by the beauty that I was shown. And that beauty stuck with me. And there's parts in the book that show that beauty. Both of my grandparents, my grandfathers especially, one was deeply musical, and that runs through my veins. That talent, that emphasis on art and expression and empathy runs through my veins. That comes from that side. The other beautiful part comes from my other grandfather, who, like I say in the book, is a Peter Pan to me. He takes me on trips to Manhattan. They both showed me unconditional love. And if anything, that book shows that love trumps everything, that there is nothing more important. And the idea that you recognize that after reading the book, and other people recognize that is hugely important as an artist.
So, what made you decide to publish a book? Because it's very personal, and I don't know, I would feel really vulnerable talking about these things now in public.
Another interesting question. I think what drives you to honesty is the idea that you can't leave this earth and not have confronted exactly what's happened to you, how it's impacted other people, and try to remedy whatever you've done wrong without regret. It's a huge undertaking. Having the artistic will to write a book like this came naturally. I loved telling these stories when people got to know. And Deb, 10 years ago, 11 years ago now, when we met, we started going out. I knew it was serious. And I decided to tell this woman the truth. And I told her about my life and what my mother had done and all those experiences. She said, "You really should write a book." And that's how it started. And it's been a 10-year journey, 500 drafts, three editors, and an amazing publisher. But yeah, the vulnerability, if you're not ashamed, shame has nothing to do with being vulnerable. And for years, I've equated the both. There were times where I carried that pain with me, never told my family about it. Never. I have my son, 37, just found out about me. He slept over here. He read the book in one night, came out the next morning and said, "Holy shit, Dad." People look at me differently. It's a beautiful thing. And that's what you get out of it. If 1,000 books were printed and only three of them were sold, that other 997 would be a gift to the world on the reviews that I get back. To people, your review was outstanding and it encapsulated exactly how I was feeling. So being vulnerable is a question of perception for me, truly.
So would you say it, the book and writing those stories and telling those stories helped you to process that past even now at a later stage in life?
In a way, yes, it was not cathartic in any way. It didn't help me process anything. That took years of therapy. That took years of self-medicating, going to 12-step programs. That took years of beating myself up and then finally reaching a point where it wasn't me anymore. And I stepped out of the shadow and writing these stories, hoping that there's somebody else in the room like me who sees this, is the most important thing in the world. Like I said, connection as an artist, and connection with anything, any living thing, is a beautiful thing. And being an artist gives us that ability innately to reach out to everything else that breathes in this world. I just wanted somebody else to see that it was okay, because my abuse was so odd and so one out of 100 that I don't think there'll be any other man who's going to talk about it. I don't think there's anybody else like that, which makes us such an odd story to begin with. But again, you tell the truth, you have nothing to worry about. So there it is.
Yeah. And kudos, because you obviously did the work, and I imagine it has been really hard work.
Never ends. Spiritual work, there's no sidelines. You're either in it or you're not. It either becomes second nature, like drinking a glass of water. Can't try. Everybody has it in them. Everybody. If your heart beats, you're already ahead of the game. It's just a question of acknowledgement. That's why I can't judge somebody else's trauma. Who knows? I've tried my best. I've worked with different organizations trying to speak to other men going through trauma. The hardest thing is for them to actually man up. It's the hardest thing in the world for a guy to be a guy. And that's what the book is all about. You know, what is a man? What is a man compared to the rest of the world? What is a man who suffers pain not as compared to a woman, just being a man and
Mm.
how you come up on top and be a full person. What's it take? Being vulnerable, crying, being honest, taking care of your family, not judging. Life lessons. No goal, no ending. Just conversations like this with people like you. There it is. You're halfway around the world and we're connecting. It's a beautiful thing, and it's due to art. It's art and honesty and vulnerability.
And where is the role of animals in your life? Because now you are deeply involved with them. So how have they had an impact on your path?
Great question. I think it's their innocence. I think it's the connection I have with them. I think when you let down your guard, you can open yourself up to anything that's living. If you would ask me specifically what it's about, there's something about the wildlife that I'm surrounded by out here. We are blessed to live in this beautiful place, right next to an Indian reservation, right on the Shinnecock Bay, and we are surrounded by the most beautiful wildlife. And yet we live in a part of Long Island where people drive like maniacs. And so they don't respect the wildlife, and the wildlife is innocent. And the idea that I could save a life and then release it, to bring it to a hospital and release it, is the most beautiful thing in the world, because what else do we have? And their innocence, they're nothing. And larger than myself are the people that I bring the animals to. They're young people. They're these beautiful, gender-bending, tree-hugging, vegan young women who have such a beautiful perspective of the world, and they save these animals. And we take in hundreds, maybe 1,000 animals a year. Anything from hawks to eagles to deers to beavers, turtles, any type of wildlife, hundreds of different songbirds, and we save them. And so if you ask me what it is, I don't know. If you believe in a creator, if you believe in God, that type of thing, you look into the eyes of an animal, to me, and there it is. That's really, dogs especially. I don't know what it is about a dog, but and horses. There's something about horses too, that there's something special about them. You know, for all the abuse that we've put them through, just like dogs, they still love us. And to me, that's big, bigger than most people would ever do.
And I think, yeah, the way I experience it now, because I work a lot with animals and their people, like dogs and cats and horses. The animals, they always try to understand us. We intelligent people say that animals don't have a language, but we're just not smart enough to understand them, and we expect them to understand us. That's something a riddle for me that
And then we project what we want them to think that we think that they're thinking back onto us, and it's not. If it, you know, with animals, it's interesting. It's a less is more. If you get down to just all they want is what they want, then you develop a great friendship with them. Whether it's a baby raccoon, which we've taken home, and thus we had hundreds of baby raccoons. We had so many baby raccoons that we started taking them home and nursing them and then bringing them back. But it's that idea that fills your heart. It's less is more with them. They're not going to lie to you. They don't have any kind of ulterior motive, unless it's my dog. She has wants to be pet all the time. Everything involves pets and treats. But it's a beautiful thing, and you understand it. It's once you step down and you simplify, once you open yourself up to all these other things that are living and breathing, to me, it helps me sidestep what's really going on out here in the world. And I find myself being blessed at the same time as being horrifically scared. And it's an equal, but the animals saved my life. I'm sure you get it. They're just a timeout. I'm out.
And I think because you show the way I experience you is you show a lot of humbleness also towards animals. So there are so many people who try to dominate them, tell them what to do and where to go and how to act. But once you don't do that, and once you accept them as equal living beings,
It's a beautiful language, and a well-trained dog. They're not really well trained. You've reached a compromise with them. They'll listen to you if you just give them the simple things that they want. That's it. It's so simple. And as soon as you start to dominate them, stuff, because we see out here, we see hoarding situations with animals and geese and hamsters. And it was just a story here. Somebody had domestic rats they were hoarding, hundreds and hundreds they had to take out of this house. It's just a question of understanding that they're animals as they have a name. We're humans as we have a name. But truly, it's all about interaction. And I feel people, here I am judging, but I would think that those people who don't acknowledge the love of an animal would be better in some ways if they just opened up to it, even if it was a little bit at a time.
Because I think also it's a platitude to say, but how people interact with animals tells a lot about them as a personality.
Yeah, like caution. There's a red flag goes up. What do you mean you don't like dogs? Okay. Have a nice day.
Now let's talk about this other constant in your life, and that's music. So you mentioned your grandfather was into music and you more or less inherited that from him, or?
Yeah. So my whole family, on my dad's side, are consummate musicians. They all live out in LA and they all make a living, either acting, painting, or writing music. I have here actually in my possession hundreds of my grandfather's compositions, some jazz pieces signed over to his friend George Gershwin. I have operas, I have concertos, and he was a painter. He spoke different languages, and everybody in my family does that. In fact, with all this artistic value that runs through my brain, I think I'm the least artistic out of everyone. It's something that I could not ignore. I've been playing music since I'm a little kid, but life gets in the way, family and this and that and stuff. But music has always been my friend, and right now is a very cool part of my life. With the book coming out, which was mine, this band that I'm in now, this project. Am I allowed to say the name of the band? Oh, so the name of the band is Saving Sanity. It's original music, and we're catching on. And for somebody at 71 years old, it's a beautiful thing. But the band and the music move me, and I get to channel my family, my grandfather. I'm writing music, I'm constructing notes, I'm building something, and his presence is there. And if I say that everybody in my family are musicians and painters and artists, it is the truth. And for some reason, my son didn't seem to get the full gene, but he's a big fan of music. But yeah, music has been a part of my life, I guess, since I'm 11 or 12 years old. Sundays in my grandmother's house was chamber music performed by my family. My grandfather's brother, my great uncle, was second violinist in Leonard Bernstein's orchestra. So I grew up with that. But yeah, music could have saved me.
But you're not playing classical music, is that? Did I get that right?
Yeah, no, I believe in it, but there's something about getting on stage. I play bass. There's something about getting on stage with a group of people. It's humbling and it shakes me inside, and it's a happy place for me on stage. Classical music, I enjoy listening to it. I was the worst student my grandmother ever had as a piano teacher. So there you go.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. Now, I know because when I read your book, I think the first comment I wrote to you is, I can see this being a blockbuster movie. And you shared that this might be a project that you're already looking into.
Everybody wants that for what they write. I'm exploring it on the outward fringes right now. trying to stay humble, not thinking it's any better than anybody else's. But quite honestly, I do believe that it would translate well into something visual, that people would take that journey with me even more closely than they did reading what I wrote. There are some people who had said the same thing to me, have some influence in the industry. Is there anything definite? No, but I'm going to push it. Book sales as an independent author, it's a slow burn, and your friends and your family rally around you and they read the book and they love it. Now, how's it going to translate out there in the world? Is it still as strong? Is it still as rugged to the people who can't really identify with you as a personality, only as an author who wrote this book? So the fact that you connected with it, that's a big deal. And there are other people who were strangers who didn't know me and they've connected with it. And I can tell you there was one woman that read the book, another friend of Deb's, influential, and she read the book. And the first comment was, "I'm only reading this book because you're Deb's partner." And the second and last comment, in a flurry of others before, but the last comment was, "You know how good this book was? This book was so good that if I left it in the back seat of a taxi cab, I'd go buy another." And so we were talking about currency before. That's currency. That's worth everything to me. And so that's what the book will be. If it becomes a movie, that's cool. That's cool.
I would love to see it. I would love
So
to
yeah,
see
that makes the two of us.
No, Steve, I could go on with you forever because I, knowing the content of your book, which my audience, not all of them do, there are so many facets of you that are so interesting and intriguing. And let me ask you like a last question here.
Of
So,
course.
when someone has read your book and is closing it down, what do you hope stays with the readers long after they finish it?
On a public level, as everybody else would think, I would hope that they enjoyed the ride, that I've kept them engaged from the first moment that they opened the book to the very last sentence. I hope that they were on the ground with me during the whole journey and they appreciate the poetry and the beauty and the darkness and the redemption in the book. As far as personal, if somebody was to close the book and say, "I get it. There is a way. We've all been abused." Because if I can tell you, as many people that I've spoken to about this book, I can tell you that some, if not a third, told me of their own abuse. Once you see somebody else in the room like you, no matter what type of abuse you've gone through, it makes you feel like it's going to be okay. Somebody else gets it. It took me years for this to be okay. Years of lying and manipulating and telling people not the truth. And so if somebody understands that honesty is the only way to go and that it's okay what you went through, but it's not okay how you're carrying it. There's a better way to carry it. Then I'm done. I've done it. I've done it. People ask me for a second book. Hey, I don't know. It's like a movie where there's a sequel. This is a book. I'm done. But
Yeah, it almost
that's what I
feels
would
like.
hope somebody would get at.
Okay. Yeah, it does feel because this book, I haven't seen a lot of books who feel like this is your life. This is your story. This is your memoir. And there is one life. It feels
Yeah,
very
it's
rounded as well.
beginning and the end. And yeah. And one last thing, if I can think of anything else personally, if I was to take something away from the book as the writer, I would have to say that the most important thing to me was that, and after they read the book, or if you've read the book, when my son was born and what he went through and the things he goes through today, I blamed it on myself for all the wrong that I did. And I realized that it's not about that, and that there's no such thing as the sins of the father perpetrated upon his kids. It's not true. And if I can stop one person from beating themselves up, from living in regret, that would be a beautiful thing as well.
Wonderful. Steve, I cannot thank you enough for being here, sharing your story with us. and for writing your book. I will definitely link your book in the show notes.
Thank you so much. Thank you. And it's so nice to finally meet you in
Yeah,
person and talk face to
absolutely.
face. It's
Yeah.
wonderful.
Yeah.
Thank you for this opportunity. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Steve. And
Speak to you soon.
this was Lead Well. Now, what is the one thing that you're taking away from this episode? Please share in the comments below and do share the podcast with your friends and family, but only if you like it.